Hello to all Earth citizens and welcome to my Conscious Coaching Podcast. This is Dr. Kianush, founder and creative director of MCCG. My Conscious Coaching Group is a non-political, non-religious 501c3 coaching nonprofit with initiatives in healthcare, leadership, and education with focus on emotional and spiritual intelligence. Our vision is to raise self and global awareness for a conscious mind through educational application of EQ and SQ, and our mission is to connect, collaborate, and partner with hospitals, academics, colleges, and medical schools and organizations to embrace growth, self-healing, and self-coaching to achieve well-being and peak performance of the individuals and the team as a one connected whole. Today, our very special and wonderful guest speaker is Margaret Moore, aka Coach Meg, and she's an MBA, an executive coach, coaching leader, and entrepreneur. Following 17 years in biotech industry, in 2000, Margaret founded Well Coaches Corporation, a school of coaching for health professionals, which has trained 15,000 coaches in 50 countries. She co-founded IOC at 2009 and currently is the chair of the Institute of Coaching at McLean Hospital and a course director of the Harvard Medical School Coaching in Healthcare and Leadership Conference. In 2010, Margaret co-founded the National Board for Health and Wellness Coaching, a nonprofit subsidiary of the National Board of Medical Examiners, establishing coaching standards, coach certification, CPT billing codes, and healthcare reimbursement of coaching services in the United States. Margaret is co-author of 23 peer-reviewed articles and 10 book chapters on coaching, also the peer-reviewed coaching psychology manual. Her popular books are Organize Your Mind, Organize Your Life, and Organize Your Emotions, Optimize Your Life. And last not least, she's co-editor of the American Medical Association's Coaching in Medical Education. I met Margaret in 2010 at IOC Annual Conference of Coaching in Healthcare and Leadership, and I have learned from her since then as a member or fellow at IOC over the years. I can say that Margaret is one of the most humble people I've ever met, and she knows so much about the coaching and is an extraordinary human being and thought leader. Welcome to our podcast, Margaret.
Well, Kianush, thank you. It's lovely to be here. Really lovely.
Thank you so much for accepting our invitation to have this conversation. Margaret, tell us about how do you lock the world to know you or to know about what to know what about you, except the bio and the the little history that I discussed.
Well, thank you, Kianush. I'm a biologist by nature, and you as a physician can relate, because I think the background of as a biologist is quite different than psychologists. And, yeah. We come from a sense of a love of the unbelievable, beautiful design. The design yeah. come out of Mother Nature, the amazing physiological excellence that makes up the human body and somehow populates our mind. And that sense of beautiful design, that sense of wholeness, that sense of continuous change, in cycles, I think that that really stands behind my interest in coaching, in helping people use their minds and bodies, their biology, and whatever the mind is, physics or whatever it is. Use yeah. it much better than we are doing today.
Exactly.
And in biotech, I was focused on Mother Nature, right? Mm-hmm. the biology side and creating new medicines and vaccines. And then now in my 24th year, I've been focusing on human nature, which is, I don't know which one's harder, Kianush.
Yeah, that's a debate.
But they're really interesting and endlessly fascinating.
Yeah, and I can say, that your scientist, background is just the base of having this IOC to be more evidence-based, research-oriented mm-hmm. coaching practice. And I really love that about the IOC as well. So in our conversation today, I'd like to explore a little bit about the history of coaching. What is coaching to your opinion, the definition, and when, I mean, the coaching profession started?
Yes. And, you know, when I started in 2000, that was about 2 years after the International Coach Federation published the first ICF coaching competencies. And when I started, I could see immediately that there was no science behind the coaching competencies, and that there is, particularly in health psychology, health behavior change, motivation, you know, self-determination theory, transcritical model, motivation, you know, blah, 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 blah. And there's many, many theories. And I was just so surprised that these competencies did not integrate science. And so I kind of went my own way in starting Well Coaches and assembling a team of people and meeting the scientists. You know, Jim Prochaska early on, he just died recently. I don't know if you know that, but
no, I didn't.
He just a few months ago, way too young. And, you know, I got to know Rich Ryan and Ed Deasy and you know, Bill Miller of Motivational Interviewing. And then I started going to the positive psychology conferences. And so I was kind of out in front, you know, even though I'm not a professional scientist, I do not have a PhD. I was out in front reading the literature, meeting the scientists, really trying to understand what they had discovered in terms of truths about ability for humans to change both mindset and behavior. And so I think that, I mean, that's one of the reasons that I helped found the Institute, because 10 years earlier, I had really tried to forge ahead and I was alone. You know, there was Tony Grant in Australia, who I met several years later. The British Psychological Society was just beginning to define coaching psychology, but, you know, it wasn't like there was a whole community there at that time. It was Coach U, CTI, the beginning of ICF. So, you know, being independent minded and being determined to, you know, really leverage what we knew and get to know the scientists, many of them early on. So that meant for me, coaching is about positive change and transformation. It is, you know, there's a really good book on insight generation, and at its core, you know, ultimately we're changing our identities. We're changing how we view ourselves, what we can and can't do, what we stand for, what's important to us. You know, it's pretty substantial change. And I've always, you know, carried the flag, the torch for, let's make real change. Let's help people transform themselves. Now, that doesn't happen all the time. But that's what I've always stood for. And so I've always been a student for all the things that need to happen. And you know, back then we really still weren't talking about neuroplasticity in any way. And now we know that the brain changes by expanding networks, and neurons and networks connect. And now we know we're building these new networks, very complex networks of thoughts and emotions and behaviors and memory and all of that. So I would say for me, coaching is about transformational change, and it's leveraging everything we can learn from all areas of science.
Yeah, I love it the way you put that. The coaching is about transformation. And as you mentioned, who could have knew that we can change our brain, you know, and we were thinking that we are who we are, and that's the end of it. That's it. But we can choose and become who we want to be. And what a wonderful, you know, coaching journey is to use that, you know, as a helper. And, as a thinking partner. So that's what we refer to the coaching. And how do you think the science is going to inform coaching?
You mean now or in the future?
Now, in the future. I mean, to me, past, present, and the future are all at the same time.
Well, I would say that it's rapidly evolving, because, you know, science is, has the intention of finding truth, but scientists live in a context and study mm-hmm. things that they think are interesting. And so certainly science hasn't addressed all the questions we have as coaches. In fact, barely begun. And the other thing about the fact that we rely a lot on psychological science, much of which isn't replicable, you can stand on self-determination theory because that is one of the most beautifully built empirically based theories. And if you remember, you know, the difference between the way self-determination theory evolved and the way that Maslow's not his hierarchy, but his model of transcendent, you know, the various needs leading us to transcendence and self-actualization. And that's more observational than study-based. And so one has to, you know, not everybody is going to be able to rate the rigor of what you're reading, but you kind of have to get a sense for what's going to stand the test of time, what might not, and to hold the science lightly. Mm-hmm. And to let it evolve. And I was just at the Positive Psychology Conference in Vancouver in July. So that's 2023. And Carol Kaufman, Susan David, and I went to the early Positive Psychology Conference in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. in 2005, I think it was, or it might have been, 2005. Yeah. So very early. And that's how we really got to know each other. And that's how ultimately the Institute was born, was, you know, out of our time together. And some of the positive psychology constructs haven't stood the test of time. Some have. Lots have evolved. But one of the more recent ones that Marty Seligman led, which is about human prospection. And it's a fascinating story, which I can tell you about, but if we've got time. But it's a really interesting model around how the regions in the brain, the default regions, naturally try to forecast the future. And that if we leverage that prospection, that envisioning the future scenarios, mm-hmm. You know, it's incredibly powerful as a way of guiding our way forward. And we had already, early on had built in a visioning process, best self visioning. Very much aligned with Richard Boyatz's intentional change theory. And that's been built into the Well Coaches model and now the national standards for health and well-being coaches. And now we know that that visualizing process is grounded in the brain actually being able to make various scenarios, create scenarios about the future, imagine different scenarios. And you know, there's worst case scenarios and there's best case scenarios. And then there's, you know, realistic scenarios. And you know, coaches can really help people use that science as they think about where they're going. And so that's just so cool, right? That's been around for a while, but I had not really sat with it. And listening to Marty Seligman and Gabriella Kellerman talk about it and thinking about it from the way I was approaching visioning, you know, I realized, wow, I mean, that basically has completely energized me again, you know, to rethink that. So, so certainly every year, every couple of years, there's something new or maybe not so new that you just haven't had time to digest that can really, you know, shake up the way you think about it. And that's just great.
Yeah, and it integrates actually everywhere because we have heard about visualization in the sport, like the tennis players, you know, they just visualize themselves and they have done a study that those that they are visualizing almost get the same result as those that they are practicing, so not much difference. So it is very important.
Right, it's a function of the brain to imagine mm-hmm. the future. And almost like a warm-up. And it's not a thinking process. It's actually an intuiting process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
It's actually letting the vision arrive, mm-hmm. the picture arrive. It's wherever it comes from, right? It's not like, okay, I'm going to think about this picture and I'm going to put this in the picture. And that it's actually sitting there and just letting your mind serve up.
Exactly,
the
to believe in
picture.
it deeply. Yeah, to believe in it deeply. And how important is the role of the coaching, as I mentioned, as a thinking partner, to make the clients to believe in themselves and to be able
Right.
to visualize themselves in that situation. I want to talk about your books, Margaret. Now, I love them. I love them. I'm an organized person. I organize everything, and I never thought I can organize even my mind. So until I read your book. So that's
Yes.
my favorite one. Organize your mind, organize your life, and organize your emotions, optimize your life. So how does our mind and emotion work?
Right.
Very good.
Big questions, but the
Yeah.
Organize Your Mind book, it's a Harvard Health book. I was invited to co-author it with Paul Hammernass, who's a child psychiatrist and expert in attention deficit disorder. And the principles in that book, the six principles of an organized mind, is based on the science around attention deficit disorder. So basically, these are the six functions of a healthy, organized brain. And when you have a disorganized mind, which almost everybody does because it's been frazzled by technologies that we didn't used to have, what happens is that some of these, one or more of these six areas is not functioning optimally. And so we present this model based on this chronic condition. And then I wrote the coaching chapter, what do I do about this? How can I optimize this particular dimension? But after that, with Shelley Carson, Shelley's got those beautiful brain charts. So we came together and created a bigger group of brain charts. From her seven, we went to 14 and got them all mapped out. There's a class, a webinar on that model. We did it, we presented it at a conference as well as in a webinar. And these that we create, I create, I my idea was to create a GPS, and I got this from a neuroscience book called The Agile Mind. And the idea being there's two dimensions, and I used a different dimension, but basically the dimension horizontal is from high control to low control. So I'm sorry, that's right to left, high control to low control. So to the right, your mind is wandering, so you let go of control. You get into flow. You get into imagining. Whereas on the left side, you're really focused, and like when you're trying to thread a needle, or be if you're a surgeon, operating and thinking about, step by step by step, the checklists and all of that. Then top to bottom is from high levels of thinking to low levels of thinking. So awareness, which is just sensory reception, receiving the sensory information, is low thinking. High thinking is analysis and evaluation. So we map these 14 brain states around this two by, this two dimensional map, and then showed how you could use all these 14 brain states in one coaching session. The idea being that there's a lot of different regions of the brain, and if you're intentional about where do you need to be in your brain in a given moment? At the beginning, it's rapport, it's heart-based, it's attunement, right? And then you move into open awareness and inquiry, and then you're into intuition and flow, and then you're at the end, you're evaluating and thinking again, right? And the idea here is just like there's a lot of parts of many muscle groups to exercise. And many ways to exercise, cardiovascular, strength, all kinds of different ways. Similarly, the brain has many regions, and if you can use more of your brain, as you would expect, you're more creative, more alive, more resourceful, more generative. And so the Organize Your Mind went from the ADD model to how can I actually organize my mind by putting my mind in the right part of my brain to meet the particular needs of the moment.
Yeah, and it all happens with the self-awareness, to be aware. I mean,
Right.
the open awareness that you mentioned, and that I think that's the part that meditation and mindfulness is helping us to be an observer, to
Right.
observe those thoughts.
Well, actually, let me just double click there, because there are actually three brain states for different states of mindfulness that we created. Mm-hmm. Open awareness is simply just the sensory reception of, you know, the taste, sound, you know, visual, all the senses. Mm-hmm. Narrow awareness is when you're focusing on one thing, like just listening to music or savoring something. But meta-awareness is a completely different brain state. They all look quite different on the brain charts. Meta-awareness is actually kind of similar to strategic thinking. There are two sort of like headlamps behind the prefrontal cortex that don't develop until your late 20s, which allow you to observe yourself. And that's the meta state. So what that shows us is that, and this was important for me because I was getting all muddled with mindfulness. Yeah. I didn't know where to put my mind because people say, put it here, put it over there, put it down there, put it. And I'm like, what am I doing with my mind? And so I actually needed to figure out, okay, in meta-awareness, I'm stepping back and observing my mind. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
but I mean, there's being or having an organized mind. It wasn't just enough to me to listen to a mindfulness teacher and mm-hmm. and have them tell. I needed to figure out where is my mind right now? What am I doing with it? Definitely. Is it over here? Is it over there? Is it down on my feet? Is it like, tell me, please give me some more specifics. What am I
doing? So definitely we need a roadmap for the mindfulness. Yeah. And I love it, the way that you even organize the mindfulness, three categories. Yeah. And the meta-awareness definitely, I think, is the state that we also are in touch with our intuition and creative state, right?
If you look at mind wandering versus meta-awareness, they look quite different. Mm-hmm. And so the meta-awareness is like zooming out and seeing a whole picture, like all
the things. Yeah.
Whereas mm-hmm. Mind wandering, which is the perception I just talked about, you know, the forecasting, mm-hmm. is actually more right brain mm-hmm. and more intuitive default regions. So they're different. And that's why, and you know, one thing we've lost in life now is mind wandering, because you know, if you stand in a line, you're not doing nothing anymore. We used to. Do you remember those days when we stood? You know, there was nothing to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, there really wasn't, except to talk to somebody. There was no, you know, look at the floor. You know, I mean, now we don't have mind wandering, and then our mind wanders when we don't want it to, and mm-hmm. and it's not meditation. It's completely unleashed. Just like when you're going for a walk, you take a dog. You know, you take them off the leash. They wander around. That is a lost skill.
yeah. It's interesting that you brought that up, because people don't know how to do nothing these days. So the moment that you have as a silent, they are so uncomfortable with silent and being alone with themselves. We pick up our phone and just look at something.
We don't. Yeah. And what a, how sad that is. I mean, I there's a lot of things that I missed when I grew up on a farm with no social life and nothing. It was really, 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 really quiet.
Yeah, something that
I did learn to sit by myself for hours.
I know.
And I still treasure the fact that it's something I love to do. It's just to do nothing, let my mind wander, you know, for hours with music, without music. So now we have to learn, we have to teach our brains how to do that, because didn't get learned early.
Yeah, we have to put it on our phone schedule, actually, something.
Mind wandering time.
Yeah, I do that. I mean, my kind of meditation is just sitting in the backyard and listening to the birds. So after my NDE, I'm just so connected to the nature, just being in the nature and just listen to the sounds of the trees or the birds, or just paying attention. And for me, that's my mind wandering and daydreaming part. So
that's great.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
I think that's a good space that we come to my favorite subject about the consciousness. But before that, I just want to ask you, how does the coaching best address the negative emotion and the adverse experiences?
Right. Well, I have a pretty clear view on this. in that, and this really blends a few scientific concepts. The first thing is that coming from internal family systems training, our emotions are parts of ourselves expressing themselves. And, you know, it's an ongoing stream, right? Because your brain is continually predicting what is going to happen to you and then sending you the message through your emotions. And so I think emotions are incredibly important raw material, and they're messengers. And there's so many of them that it almost seems impossible that we could integrate all of them into something better. But I think they're basically just the messenger telling you, hey, come and spend time with me, and then I can integrate into higher consciousness. So it's like I'm the emotion is blocking you from perceiving something. Mm-hmm. And if you can integrate it, which is an intentional process, which I've played around with and now have a hack for it, the integration of the negative emotional experience moves you from the tense state, the uncomfortable state, to the calm equanimity, the balance. Yeah. It doesn't last long because more emotions come up right behind it. But this ongoing integration, and I think, you know, when people go on big mindfulness retreats, whether it's for 3 years or a weekend, they're hoping to integrate a bunch of emotions that are rattling around, right? That's what we hope for. Yeah. And so I see then any challenge to where people want to go is where the tension is, where the emotions are. And if you face into them and learn from them, they're parts of you that have something to say, and then help them shift. Not therapy, not healing, not going down and diving down to, you know, when you first felt like this and what was the situation that led you to feel blah, 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 but more, you know, in the moment. This is a stressful moment, but I need to get over the stress and strain, and otherwise I'm not going to get where I want to go. And so the Greek Stoics describe this as the obstacle is the way. So I think emotions are essentially the raw material for transformational change. I think they're a beautiful thing. And I spend an hour a day integrating whatever is coming up, with my own little tricks. And so I can start my day with all the questions I have about it. It's, you know, and a lot of it's, if most of it's work, you know, this, mm-hmm. got this meeting and I'm nervous about that, or I've got yesterday this happened and I'm frustrated. And so then I just go right into that and name it and say, okay, what is it that I need to take away from this? And I move it aside and I look to integrate and get the consciousness. So I think the emotions are the pathway to expanded consciousness. If you know how to use them. And so they're not just something to brush away and breathe through. They're actually a path towards more consciousness, because they're actually blocking you from consciousness, right? Because they're taking over your mind's experience.
Yeah, even the tears, you know, there is this culture that crying, maybe it's bad, but when you pay attention and somebody's crying, pay attention to your own tears, there's an information behind it.
Yeah, they're coming. And, they're coming forward. They want to get out.
Yeah, they want to get emotions. Out. You don't pay attention to them. It comes out as a tear. And if you listen, you hear the message that why are these tears are falling?
What am I feeling and what's going on
underneath?
And where is this taking me? Yeah. I mean, acceptance and commitment therapy, I love it. It gets you to experience the emotion, accept it, feel compassion, and then find your values and move forward. I'm really adding another step, which is to intentionally integrate the experience little by little, you know, not all at once, but a little every day. And it's like you're clearing the brush fire in your mind of all the frenzy, right? And gradually you get to moments of more clarity, more calm, more peace. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if you known me 20 years ago, 25 years ago, gratitude did not come naturally. And the idea of being content, you know what? I didn't even know how to get there. Yeah. I didn't even, you know, maybe I did. I had more of it when I was younger. But as the ego builds and you take on things and your ego gets bigger, really, until you deconstruct it later. And so now, I mean, when I would do strength surveys, you know, I was really low on gratitude, and I was definitely low on peace. And now I have regular moments of both of those, which means it's not personality wiring. Mm-hmm. It's really just my, you know, my lack of consciousness that I had to grow it. I had to realize that the lack of contentment was parts of me saying, I'm not good enough. I'm not doing enough. I've not accomplished enough. You know, how come my classmates in my MBA class are making more money and having bigger success? And, you know, all that stuff, very common stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, but if you keep stepping in and integrating it and saying, okay, now what's on the other side of this? You realize I am whole. I am at peace. Mm-hmm. I still am not contented at every moment, but I can pull it out when I need it. And that's the gift of growing consciousness, is that and I know you know this, the end game is end game, if there's really no end game, but the prize is the peace and the deep gratitude and the humility. I mean, you described me as humble at the beginning, and I don't know that I would agree with that.
You are.
but and I think there's a part of me that always was, you know, when you're born on a dairy farm in the middle of nowhere, you don't have a lot of heirs.
Such a journey, such a long road.
but at the same time, you know, humility, you have to go through a lot to realize that you do your best, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's what we're here for. It's really not that complicated.
Yeah, definitely. I just came from the conference, International Association of Near-Death Studies, and people asked for those who didn't have the NDE, near-death experience, to feel that love and enlightenment, what is the closest to it? And we mm-hmm. just figured out that's the gratitude. So the gratitude yes. is the most closest yeah. to being to that close and in touch with that eternal love, you know, and enlightenment. Yes. And yeah. finally reaching to my favorite, you know, subject of consciousness. How do you think that the consciousness coaching and leadership are related? And what does it mean to expand the consciousness in the coaching?
Right. Well, what comes to mind right now is the adult development framework from Bob Keegan, and, you know, the subject object idea, that where the emotion or the thought or the belief controls mm-hmm. you. So you're subject to it, like you're on a puppet mm-hmm. string. An object means it becomes an object you can actually separate from it and look at it objectively. And that subject to object experience, or attached to detached in, you know, Buddhist teachings, or there's many, many ways to describe this phenomenon. I called it integration, but it's the same thing. It's the idea that you know, you're, and so, In Keegan's model, I mean, he's not the only one that created it, but he really brought it alive in his books and teachings. We start off, you know, in adulthood with the socialized mind, where your esteem, your self-worth is defined by what you think others think of you. And that's not high consciousness, right? And then you move to creating your own sense of who you are and what your worth is, which is self-authoring. But that then leads to a pretty darn healthy ego, because now mm-hmm. you're the author of who you are. Mm-hmm. And then the next phase is self-transforming, where you're, you know, gradually breaking, you know, there's sort of like a big rock, you begin to dissolve it so that it gets porous. Mm-hmm. And eventually it may be just a structure with lots of holes. So it's still there. The structure of your personality is still there, but you're really in the flow, and you're continually, you know, evolving. So you're one way in one meeting today, and then the week later you are you're different again, because your ego is so, it's still there, but it's not so rigid and so you're really evolving quickly. Mm-hmm. And people are afraid to let go of that ego structure because they think they won't have any drive. Mm-hmm. And then they won't be able to support their families because they won't be, you know, they won't get themselves out of bed. And what I've learned, you know, and it's really been, this is the last decade for me. And this is one of, I think, the important messages from doing deep work with yourself every day is that, in fact, when you dissolve the structure and you're transforming more rapidly, your real life force comes out, your real energy comes out. You're more creative, more energetic, more alive, more, you know, and so you're actually younger, not older. And so that's for me, pure consciousness, or as pure as we can get, which is that you are just in the flow of life and not very much thinking about your own ego and your own self. I mean, you still are, but it doesn't plague you. You know, we're still humans. We have needs. We all have our own kind of ideal way of living, and, you know, what material possessions do we value and what experiences do we value? And we're humans. We need to meet those needs to feel good and to enjoy life, but to suffer less and to just be in the moment, in the flow, in the, as Piercig would say in Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, being in touch with the metaphysics of quality, like in the moment, there's a charge, almost like a positive charge of goodness. And if you follow that, you'll actually create good. And, yeah. And that's for me, what the, you know, for me, as far as I've gotten in consciousness, is being able to just be with that energy and really be in a dance. And I think that's the opportunity for all of us who understand this work, is to spend more time in that space.
Yeah, definitely. I love the way you put it, being in a dance with that energy. And I believe that my consciousness is connected to the one consciousness of the whole consciousness that of existence. And as you mentioned, I mean, we need our ego somehow, but for our survival, but it's, I always says it has to be on the back seat, not on behind the driving wheels.
Yeah, it's on a leash.
Yeah.
You know, when people, I live on a corner and lots of people walk their dogs, and there's lots of situations where the dogs walk the owners.
Yeah.
And that's how the ego.
Exactly. Good metaphor. I'm going to use that again. So well put, Margaret. So thank you so much. Getting close to our end. But before that, I just want to ask you, do you have any exciting news or anything else to tell about yourself? We were just talking about, you know, the CPT code.
Yeah. So I think it's worth saying for all of the listeners that are in healthcare.
Yeah.
One of my journeys has been, you know, to start a school of coaching, science-based coaching skills, generate research studies, prove that it works, build national standards, pursue a path to a job for a coach in healthcare. And in the last 4 years, I've been leading a large team to get the codes for healthcare services. You know, there's this huge manual of thousands and thousands of them, and to have codes for coaching services or have other codes that are similar that coaches can use. And in about 6 weeks ago, Medicare announced that it's proposing to include health and well-being coaching services in telehealth in 2024. And it's 1 year. So mm-hmm. We've got to turn it into permanent, and there's lots of different ways this can go. But it feels as though, you know, when the government, when CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, decide that health equity is important, that whole health is important, that people need real support to get healthy with their own efforts, not just relying on medicines. I think that the things have shifted, you know, the ground has shaken, and my, you know, one of my, it's not my only purpose, but one of my purposes has been to put the coach on the healthcare team, and that it's happening in small ways, but now we can really move. And so that is transformational. You know, one, the full impact of coaching in the doctor's office will be a transformational opportunity.
It will be a game changer, you know, especially for the patient care, you know. And thank you, Margaret, for all and everything you are doing as a pioneer, you know, of transformation in coaching and in healthcare, especially, and carrying the torch and the light, you know, and paving the road for so many others that are following. And looking up to you as a role model. Thank you for being here today, and I really appreciate that we had this conversation.
Me too. Thank you so much, Kailush. It's always a delight.
It is here too. Love you. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Goodbye to our listeners, and remember, one podcast at a time. Thank you for being with us for another one. You can visit our website at myconscious.org to learn more about us, or write to us at coach@myconscious.org. And please stay connected by following us on our social media platforms, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, not to miss our upcoming episodes and events. Love and light from all of us to you. Make it a great day, everyone.